Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of Take One. This is your host, Juan Pablo Sa, talking to you from the CITR station at UBC Point Grey Campus, located in the unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. This week, we have a very special episode for all of you, and that is the case because I'll be reviewing two movies, and those movies are Jaws and The Woman King, and also, this whole episode is going to be accompanied by music from the movie Jaws, music that is somehow related to the ocean, and music from The Woman King. Now, before we jump into our first review of the day, which will be a review of Jaws, it is time we go into our first musical break, and it is time we go listen to the main theme from Jaws, composed by John Williams. And here it is.
Megamall's debut EP, Escape from Lizard City, goes live on Friday, July 1st. Buy the cassette and lyric book on Bandcamp or stream wherever you listen to music. For the last 2.5 years, you could avoid everyone except yourself. Welcome to Lizard City.
Oh, I see the love thickening over time.
Welcome back to Take One. This is your host, Juan Pablo Sa, talking to you from CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. I hope you'll enjoy that musical break, but now it is time to jump into our first review of the day, and that is a review of Jaws. So Jaws was directed by Steven Spielberg, and it tells the story of Chief Brody as he hunts down a great white shark that is terrorizing the citizens of Amity Island. And the first thing that I have to say is that this will be, without a doubt, a spoiler review. If you haven't watched Jaws, what are you waiting for? Go watch it. It is amazing. It is one of my favorite films of all time. It is one of the best horror movies I've ever seen. And if I'm being honest, it is one of Steven Spielberg's finest. And by the way, when I say that Jaws is one of Steven Spielberg's finest, that means a lot. After all, Steven Spielberg has directed classics, absolute classics, such as Jurassic Park, E.T. the Extraterrestrial, Schindler's List, Saving Private Ryan, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Catch Me If You Can, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and many, many more. Therefore, when I say that Jaws is one of Steven Spielberg's best, that means a lot. Anyway, yesterday I rewatched Jaws and I had the chance of watching it in theaters for the very first time. It was an amazing experience, and as soon as the movie was over, I knew that I needed to talk about it. That said, If I'm being honest, I struggle to come up with what to say, because what can I say about Jaws that hasn't been said so already? Sure, I could talk about John Williams' incredibly iconic score and how, even though it is very simple and minimalist, it is also one of the most effective in film history. I could talk about Spielberg's use of cinematography and visuals in order to convey the mental state of our characters or the perilousness of their situations. Or I could even talk about the incredible performances given by Roy Scheider, Robert Shaw, and Richard Dreyfuss. That said, there are many videos covering these topics already. Therefore, in order to try to say something new, I will instead talk about how, in Jaws, Steven Spielberg mastered the art of cinematic suspense by using Alfred Hitchcock's bomb theory. So for those of you who don't know, Alfred Hitchcock is one of the most famous directors from the golden age of Hollywood. And in my opinion, he's one of the best directors of all time. He directed masterpieces such as Psycho, Rear Window, Vertigo, North by Northwest, Dial M for Murder, Rebecca, Rope, and many, many more. That said, for many people, he is just known as the master of suspense. And the reason why Hitchcock is referred to as the master of suspense is because he knew exactly how to evoke this feeling from his audience. And that is something that can be clearly seen in his iconic bomb theory. So the bomb theory is a rhetorical experiment that Hitchcock uses in order to illustrate the difference in between shock and suspense. As part of this rhetorical experiment, Hitchcock presents two different scenarios. In scenario number one, there are four people sitting around a table talking about baseball. Then suddenly, after 5 minutes of talking, a bomb explodes. If audiences were to see the scenario on the big screen, they would experience 10 seconds of shock right after the bomb explodes. Now, scenario number two is pretty much the same. You have the same four people sitting around a table talking about baseball, and just like in scenario number one, after 5 minutes of talking, the bomb explodes. That said, what makes the scenario different is that before the conversation even begins, the audience is told that there is a bomb underneath the table that will go off in 5 minutes. Now, if audiences were to see the scenario on the big screen, instead of just simply experiencing 10 seconds of shock, they would feel 5 whole minutes of suspense. So basically, if I were to narrow down Hitchcock's bomb theory into its essence, I would say that this theory teaches us that in order for there to be suspense, the audience always needs to know more than the characters on screen. And this fundamental can be found throughout Hitchcock's entire body of work. In Psycho's iconic shower scene, viewers are made aware of the killer's presence way before the protagonist even notices him. In The Birds, we see the crows gathering outside the school before the protagonist even realizes that they're in danger. And in Rope, the entire movie is filled with suspense because while the characters are enjoying a dinner party, we, the viewers, know that there's a dead body hidden in the room. And this fundamental, the idea that viewers need to know more than the characters on screen in order for there to be suspense, is one that Steven Spielberg understands to perfection, and he makes that very clear all throughout Jaws. After all, most shark attack scenes in this film are great examples of Hitchcockian suspense. In these scenes, viewers usually know more than the characters on screen. We are aware of the shark's presence way before the characters even realize that they're in danger. And that is something that Steven Spielberg achieved by using John Williams' amazing music and extremely effective POV shots in order to announce the shark's presence. 90% of the times before the shark even attacks, we hear that iconic ba-dum, 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 ba-dum. And on top of that, we are allowed to see the world from the shark's perspective. We know more than the characters on screen, and therefore, we feel suspense. Now, considering that I'm talking about Jaws and Hitchcock's bomb theory, I have to mention the iconic get out of the water scene. In this scene, a bunch of children are playing in the water until the shark attacks a kid who is having fun with an inflatable. And the reason why I have to single out this scene is because in this scene, there are two people who are simultaneously experiencing the effects of Hitchcock's bomb theory. The viewer and Chief Brody. Before the children even realize that they're in danger, the viewer is aware of the shark's presence thanks to John Williams' score and the iconic POV shots, and Chief Brody is aware of the shark's presence because he's pretty much the only person on the beach who knows about Chrissy Watkins' death. So yeah, it is fair to say that in Jaws, Steven Spielberg uses Hitchcock's bomb theory to perfection in order to evoke suspense from his viewers. Now, even though the suspense in this film is truly fantastic, there is something else that I have to highlight, and that is Steven Spielberg's unparalleled ingenuity. For those of you who don't know, initially Spielberg wanted to feature the shark a lot more throughout the film. In fact, the shark was going to be visible from very early on in the movie. That said, as soon as they began production, the shark animatronics malfunctioned when exposed to the salt water and quickly became unusable. And at this moment, instead of giving up and walking away, Steven Spielberg used his ingenuity to come up with a way to make a movie full of shark attacks without actually having a shark. These obstacles and limitations forced Steven Spielberg to think outside the box and inspired him to come up with what would become some of the most iconic elements of this film. Now that they didn't have a shark animatronic, the camera and the music would need to be the shark. Of course, they eventually got some of the shark animatronics to work, but they used them sparingly, mostly in the third act. And I love this story because it shows that limitations are not always a bad thing. You know, people have this idea that limitations are detrimental and always hinder an artist's creativity. But that is just simply not the case. Yes, limitations can sometimes impede people from doing certain things, but the best artists rise to the occasion and see these limitations as challenges. Challenges inviting them to come up with ingenious ways to make their visions a reality despite these limitations. And Steven Spielberg is a great example of one of these artists. If it wasn't for the fact that the shark animatronic malfunctioned, maybe Jaws wouldn't have been as great as it is. After all, if Spielberg wouldn't have faced these obstacles, he wouldn't have had the need to come up with things such as shark POV shots or music that could be used to inform viewers about the shark's presence without there actually even being a shark on screen. On top of that, the limitations that Spielberg faced might have been a good thing because they forced him to understand the fundamental principle of horror cinema, that viewers are always more scared about what they can't see than about what they can. If the shark animatronics would have never malfunctioned, Spielberg would have probably used them very heavily throughout the film. Audiences would have probably gotten a good look of the shark from very early on in the movie, and the fear would have probably disappeared by the beginning of the third act. After all, seeing something, understanding something, that is what makes our fear disappear. We are afraid of what we can't see or understand, and the limitations that Spielberg faced while making Jaws allowed him to realize that. After all, these limitations forced them to keep the shark hidden until the very, very end. So yeah, thanks to the limitations that he faced while making Jaws, Spielberg was able to show us that the scariest shark is not the one that can be photographed or filmed, but the one that lives exclusively in the viewer's mind. So in conclusion, Jaws is an absolute masterpiece. It is one of my favorite movies of all time. It is one of Steven Spielberg's very best. And honestly, it goes up there in the pantheon of what I consider to be the greatest horror movies ever made, along with films such as Psycho, The Exorcist, Alien, The Shining, The Thing, The Silence of the Lambs, Perfect Blue, The Sixth Sense, and Hereditary. If I were to give Jaws a score in between 1 to 10, I would definitely, without the shadow of a doubt, give it a 10 out of 10, because this film is an absolute masterpiece. And that is it for my review of Jaws. I hope you'll enjoy that, but now it is time to jump into our second musical break, and it is time we go listen to Beyond the Sea by Bobby Darin. And here it is.
Somewhere beyond the sea, somewhere waiting for me, my lover stands on golden sand. Watches the ship that goes sailing somewhere beyond the sea. She's there watching for me. If I could fly like birds on high, then straight to her arms I'd go sailing. It's far beyond the star, it's near beyond the moon. I know beyond a doubt my heart will lead me there soon. Meet beyond the shore.
to change the state of the world, but instead you keep buying material goods to satisfy whatever desire you have in that very moment? Me too. But now you can do both! Rock Shop and Community Thrift is a local vintage shop that fulfills your 1970s alt-chic fantasy while also supporting at-risk people through their compassionate and supportive work training program. All of their profits go to the PHS Community Services Society to support ongoing healthcare, harm reduction, and health promotion projects in Vancouver and Victoria. So stop by their two locations, Community Unisex on West Hastings or Community Frock Shop on Corral Street. And if you know any other local businesses that deserve recognition for their generous business practices or their contributions to the community, please DM us on Instagram at CITR and Discorder because we would love to spotlight them. Because hey, if you can't stop buying, you might as well start supporting.
Welcome back to Take One. This is your host, Juan Pelosa, talking to you from CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. I hope you'll enjoy that musical break, but now it is time to jump into our second and final review of the day, and that is a review of The Woman King. So The Woman King was directed by Gina Prince-Blythewood, and it is an action-packed historical epic that follows a group of female African warriors as they protect their kingdom from enemies that seek to destroy it. Now, the first thing I will say is that this is a spoiler-free review. So if you haven't seen the movie, that is perfectly fine. There will be no spoilers in this review. Now, I'll begin by saying that I won't be reviewing this film based on how historically accurate it is. I believe that historical films can be great even if they are not historically accurate, and therefore, this is not something that I'll be taking into account. I will review this film as I do any other piece of entertainment, whether it is a story completely made up or based on real-life events. And having said that, I thought The Woman King was amazing. I was engaged from start to finish, and this is a movie that I would highly, highly recommend. Now, when it comes to the story of this film, it is nothing new or revolutionary. It is pretty much what you can expect from historical epics. That said, there is nothing wrong with that. Just because we've already seen stories like this before, that doesn't mean that The Woman King is a bad film. Sure, The Woman King doesn't reinvent the wheel when it comes to storytelling and historical epics, but why does it have to? This is a film that is not interested in challenging the genre conventions of classic historical epics. Its goal is to be one of those classical historical epics, and in doing that, it succeeds tremendously. In fact, this is such an amazing historical epic that, at times, it reminded me of movies such as Braveheart and Gladiator. Now, I do have to say that even though this film is not doing anything new or revolutionary when it comes to its story, it does do something very new and revolutionary when it's come to its setting. And that is setting this film in Africa in the 1800s. Yes, you might have seen countless historical epics, but how many have you seen that are set in Africa and that deal with this continent's unique conflicts and issues? Not many. Considering that, I love the fact that we now have a film like The Woman King, which on top of being great, is also able to expose mainstream viewers to a portion of history that, in all honesty, has been overlooked by Hollywood for way too long. Now, when it comes to the performances, there are a few that I have to mention. Thuso Umbedu is excellent as Nawi, the film's protagonist. Even though she's sharing the screen with some of the best actors of our generation, she is more than capable of holding her own. Viola Davis is incredible, as always, and the character she plays in this film, the warrior Naniska, allows her to flex her acting muscles in more ways than I have ever seen. Yes, she still has all the great sentimental moments that we've come to expect from Viola Davis, but this role also requires a level of physicality that I've never seen from her. And she kills it. Her action scenes are extremely badass and are absolutely incredible. I also have to mention Sheila Ateem, who kills it as a Mensa, and John Boyega, who is extremely regal as King Gesso. That said, if there is one performance that I have to single out as my favorite, it has to be Lashana Lynch as Izogi. I have seen Lashana Lynch before in movies such as Captain Marvel and No Time to Die, but I have never seen Lashana Lynch being this great. Her action scenes are amazing, her comedic moments are hilarious, and one could even say that her relationship with Nawi is the beating heart of this movie. Now, moving on to the technical aspects, I thought the visuals of this movie were amazing. The colors are vibrant, the landscapes look gorgeous, and my favorite thing is that it all feels and looks real. There is barely any CGI throughout the film, and that is very, very refreshing. I also thought that the music was great, and the reason why I love the music so much is because it does everything that you expect music and historical epics to do. It is sentimental when it needs to be, it's well sobbed during action scenes, and it really knows how to accentuate and complement the visuals on screen. I also thought that the costumes and set design were really freaking amazing. They are very vibrant and colorful. And now, a little anecdote, very early into the film, I noticed that an item of a character's costume had a broken piece. And at first, I was a bit confused. I was like, really? You are telling me you're making this multi-million historical epic and you decided not to fix that broken prop before you started filming? That said, I quickly realized that there is a narrative reason for why that piece of costuming is broken. And I just wanted to mention that because I thought that was very clever and I really enjoyed it. Now, not everything about this film was perfect, and there are some things that I believe could have been better. For instance, there is a conflict involving the king's wife that, in my opinion, wasn't that necessary or interesting. Also, some of the romance in this film is not that great, and last but not least, I'm not a fan of the film's title because, if I'm being honest, I believe it somewhat spoils the movie. So in conclusion, The Woman King is an amazing historical epic that manages to find a place amongst films such as Gladiator and Braveheart. Its emotional moments are powerful, its action scenes are thrilling, and it manages to always be enthralling from start to finish. If I were to give this film a score in between 1 to 10, I would give it a 9 out of 10, which means I thought this film was amazing. And that is it for my review of The Woman King, but now it is time to jump into our third and final musical break, and it is time we go listen to My Power by Beyoncé. And here it is.
In the lead, who you wanna be? I'm who they wanna be. B-E-A-U-T-Y-E. Never seen so much rage from a queen. Rage from a queen. Queen so strong, cause she was a machine. Girl of your dreams, Sinclair regime. Turn to the max, can't forget Maxine.
Refer to me as a goddess, I'm tired of being modest. 100 degrees the hottest, if we're being honest. Ebony, antibiotics, black people win. They say we're being demonic. Angel in disguise, I hate, I have to disguise it. Why you gotta despise it? Rich in your mind is why I'm making deposits. Carry all the power, it's time to realize it.
Don't ever take my power, my power, my power. Don't ever take my power, my power, my power. They feel away, oh wow. They feel away, oh wow. Don't ever take my power, my power, my power. Don't ever take my power, my power, my power. They feel away, oh wow. They feel away, oh wow.
This that rhythm, this that lightning. This that bar, this ain't no par. This that nappy, this that herb. This that kinfolk, this that skinfolk. This that war, this that bloodline. On the front line, ready for war. Where you gon' run? Protect my grace, keep it locked in the safe. Don't make me get back to my ways. My power they never take.
Don't ever take my power, my power, my power. Don't ever take my power.
Take my ta-ta.
Now the patriarchy is dead, and we killed it. If you identify as a woman, femme, trans, or non-binary, CITR wants you on the air. You can talk about literally whatever you want as long as you care about it. No worries if you have no experience, we'll train you in everything you need to know. Come by CITR and say hi.
Hey. Hi. Hello.
From 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday to Friday to help us never play Led Zeppelin on CITR 101.9 FM ever again.
Welcome back to Take One. This is your host, Juan Pablo Sá, talking to you from CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. I hope you enjoyed that musical break, but that is going to be it for this week's episode of Take One. That said, I will remind you all that this year, Take One will be covering the Vancouver International Film Festival as members of the press. We are very excited for the festival to begin, and we can't wait to bring you all the best coverage we can. Now, as I already mentioned in previous episodes, we will also be giving away tickets for the festival. So if you guys want to potentially win any of these free tickets, make sure you're following us on Take One's Instagram, and that is at Take One Show. Once again, that is at Take One Show. We will be posting information about our giveaways real soon on our Instagram, but for now, thank you all so much for tuning in. Thank you all so much for listening to me talk about The Woman King and Jaws. But that is going to be it for this week's episode. Goodbye.